Gelatin Hour, directed by Rudy Valley.
Company. Friend discusses and other statisticians would be more than justified in calling attention to the drift toward humor that motivates our program tonight. Heading a distinguished list of guests is that funniest of Hollywood and Broadway ladies, Miss Mary Bolan, in an original sketch by Keith Fowler. Next in line comes our own Mr. Edgar Bergen with his own Charlie McCarthy. Then there's mirth provoker Milton Douglas and Priscilla. Milton's nominee for Public Pest Number One, and...
There's nothing funny about the Hamilton College Choir, Rudy.
No, there isn't, Graham. Fun's fun, but you can't laugh all the time, you know. That's why we brought down this great organization of 60 male voices from Clinton, New York, to be with us tonight. Seriously inclined listeners, too, will be interested in the wise counsel of Marjorie Hillis, author of Live Alone and Like It, a volume that has become almost a guidebook for bachelor girls. The lineup, please, Graham.
Mary Bolan, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, Milton Douglas and Priscilla, Marjorie Hillis, the Hamilton College Choir,
and the Connecticut Yankees, the Swing Kids, the Gentlemen Songsters. Lights, camera, action. This prospect, girls, it may mean a contract for life.
To whom is the letter going?
To my prospective wife. My dear prospective wife.
No, no.
My dear prospective sweetie. As I reply to yours of recent date,
You sound as though you're drawing up a statistician's treaty. Suppose I help you out as you dictate.
You're just too marvelous.
You're just too marvelous.
Too marvelous for words.
Too marvelous for words.
Like glorious.
Like glorious.
And glamorous.
Glamorous.
And
that old standby amorous.
It's all too wonderful.
It's all too wonderful.
I'll never find the words.
You'll never find the words.
That say enough.
That say enough.
Or tell enough.
Or tell enough.
I mean, they just aren't swell enough.
They just aren't swell enough.
You're much too much.
You're much too much.
And just too very, very.
And just too very,
to ever be. Ever be
in Webster's dictionary.
So I'm borrowing a love song.
And so you're borrowing a love song.
From the bird.
From the bird.
To tell you that you're marvelous.
To tell you that you're marvelous.
Too marvelous.
Too marvelous.
For words.
For words.
May I express just one T.S.? You're just too wonderful, too wonderful for words.
Nice, fabulous.
Yes.
Fabulous.
Yes. Nebulous, it's all too wonderful, an ordinary word.
Nice, magical, mystical.
Seems just too apophysical, the sweetest word. In Keith O'Kelly's lyrics,
are sweet enough.
This'll kill you, to be your panegyric.
And so you're borrowing a love song from the bird.
We introduced Milton Douglas to the networks for the first time, but failed to do full justice to the pesky Priscilla, who spent a very pleasant 5 or 6 minutes heckling him. Milton is a gay blade, but Priscilla is no mean exponent of the thrust and parry herself. Back again for the second week in a row, Milton Douglas and Priscilla.
Thank you very much, Rudy.
You're very welcome, Milton.
And thank you for your nice introduction.
You're welcome, Milton.
And thank you for inviting me here last week.
You're welcome.
And thank you for inviting me here again tonight.
Thank you for coming, Milton.
And thank you for inviting me here next week, I hope. There, I believe I've thanked you for everything, or did I leave something out?
Yes, you left out the kitchen sink for shooting a damn McGrew and me.
Oh, hello, Priscilla. I don't know how I ever forgot to thank you for being here. I beg your pardon.
Well, I beg your pardon.
I beg your pardon.
I beg your pardon.
I beg, wait a minute. This can't go on forever.
Oh, yes, it can. I beg your pardon, I beg your pardon, I beg your pardon.
You're all right, yes. It can go on forever. Priscilla, can't you say anything but I beg your pardon, I beg your pardon?
Oh, sure. Pardon me.
Well, that is a delightful change. Tell me, Priscilla, did you really come here tonight to scramble me up?
Oh, don't be an egg. I just came here to help you broadcast.
That's a very kind thought, Priscilla, but what makes you think you'd do so well with me?
Well, look what Edgar Bergen's doing with a dummy.
Fine thing. Do I have to stand here to be insulted?
No, sit down. Now, I have an idea. Let you and me have a question bee.
Stung again. What's the question, my queen?
Well, honey, a question bee is, well, you know, you give me the answers to the questions I ask you.
I'm not very good at games like that, Priscilla.
Oh, don't worry. I know you're ignorant. I just want to prove it.
Very good. Now, look, that's a challenge to my mental ability. Now, I'm ready for your questions.
Ready?
Yes, ready.
What's the answer?
The answer to what? What's the question?
No, you don't. I asked you first.
But you didn't give me any question. How can I answer a question you didn't ask?
Then you admit you don't know the answer.
Of course I don't know. How can I?
Then you're one-fifth of a ghost.
Who's one-fifth of a ghost?
You are. You look it, too. Now, you want to play some more question bees?
No, I don't. I want my sanity. I want an aspirin. Go away. I want to be alone.
Oh, Greta Douglas loves Priscilla Taylor. No, let me ask you just one more question.
All right, what?
Why are you so anemic?
Who's anemic? Why, I had a physical examination just the other day, and the doctor told me I was a perfect specimen.
Of what?
Really, Priscilla, when you chastise me mentally, that's bad enough. But when you try and wreck me physically, well, I'm 6 feet tall and 180 pounds.
Gosh, you're almost big enough to fight Joe Louis.
Almost. I like that. Why, only the other day I had an offer of $25,000 to fight Louis.
Well, what are you holding out for?
Funeral expenses. But no kidding. I'm really in training. I'm taking boxing lessons from a correspondence school.
Are you in secret training or do you open your mail?
Very good. I had my first fight last week, but I was knocked out in the second round.
What happened?
They forgot to send me my muscles. Priscilla, I should be angry with you, but I'm not. I like you, and I think you're cute, and I like that gown.
Do you? I got this gown for my 16th birthday.
Sure did wear well, didn't it?
Mean enough to say anything like that to you. I like your suit.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's as good as the ones they're wearing today. What size suit do you wear?
2250.
Yeah? You know, my brother's got a brown suit like that with green pants.
What kind of a suit is that?
It's an overcoat. It fits him like a glove, too.
His overcoat fits him like a glove. How does his gloves fit him, like an overcoat?
No, like galoshes.
It's easy to see. It's easy to see, Priscilla, that your brother is a Bro Brummel.
Yeah, Brummel, without the R.
Now, don't start a spelling bee.
Gosh, can't you spell either?
Sure, E-I-T-H-E-R, either. How's that?
You got me under your spell.
Priscilla, you know, I'm not the forward kind, and, well, I'd like to tell you something that's been in my heart since we met.
You got heartburn. Now, the best thing for you to do is go right down to the corner drugstore and get yourself a drink.
You are naive, Priscilla. What I wanted to say
was... Yeah, I know. I'm a very nice girl. I got beautiful brown hair, gorgeous eyes, pearly white teeth. I've seen every picture show and nightclub in town, and I got a date with a boyfriend who's a tie fighter, and he's very jealous, and he talks to men who talk to me. Now, what do you want?
Yes, you are naive. But would you...
Well, I'd love to. Where we go?
You see, I'd like to...
Yeah, why not? It's so romantic, isn't it? I think it's going to be a full mellow moon tonight. Rudy Valley sings so sentimentally. Don't you think so, or would you rather sit this one out?
Well, really,
And that's what I like about you. You're so modest.
Modest about what?
Oh, about 8 o'clock would be perfect. Will you call for me?
Yes, I guess I will.
Oh, that'll be wonderful, because I can't make it.
You want me to meet you tonight because you can't make it? Why not?
Because I'm not doing anything tonight.
That's swell.
Let's make it tomorrow, because I expect to be very busy tomorrow. How's that?
I'll be busy, too, so we'll practically have the whole day to ourselves.
I'll bet it's a date. I'll meet you on Main Street.
Where's that?
You take Route 9. It's all torn up.
Can I take Route 10?
Well, you can, but that's no good because it's the best road. Then you turn right.
Yes.
Well, you could also go right.
Yes. Well, supposing I go right. Can I go right if I want to go right?
No, you can't go that way. That's a detour.
Hmm.
Have you a car?
Yes, a Super Heterodyne 6, and it gets all the foreign stations. And I've got a trailer, too.
What kind of a trailer?
The finance company.
Then it's a date for us not to meet tomorrow night.
Definitely.
Good. Then until yesterday, hello. Hello.
Some months back, we were fortunate to have Miss Bolden play the role of Mrs. Herbert Baffin in an original sketch by Keith Fowler called The Art of Conversation. She liked the characters so much that she has asked Keith to write another Mrs. Baffin skit for her, which he has done, and tonight we shall hear that result. Miss Mary Boland in The Art of Organization. The scene is the committee room of the Civitarian's local booster organization. The time, the present. As the curtain rises, two members of a three-man committee are waiting for Herbert Baffin to discuss plans for a forthcoming jamboree to be given by the Civitarians. But little do the poor males know that Herb is out of town on business and that Mrs. Baffin has appointed herself in his place. Playing the roles of the Civitarians are Clyde Fillmore and Edward Butler. Enter Mrs. Herbert Baffin with a swish.
Good evening, gentlemen. Am I in the right room?
That all depends, lady. Who are you looking for?
Well, I hope I'm looking for you, since I seem to have found you.
This is highly irregular, madam. Ladies are not permitted in the Civitarian Club except on odd Wednesdays.
I certainly shouldn't boast about it. It puts you in a very bad light.
I don't want to act impolite, lady, but maybe you better look somewhere else. We're busy.
Precisely. We're mapping out the plans for the annual Civitarian Jamboree.
Oh, then I am in the right room. Oh, will you push a chair forward, please? Yes, you may place it. Oh, let me see. Which is the head of the table?
Hey, you've got no right to park yourself here. We just told you.
Yes, that you're mapping out plans for the Civitarian entertainment. Splendid. And now that I'm here, we can roll up our sleeves and pitch in. Figure of speech, naturally. Yes, you may keep your coats on.
Madam, you are laboring under a false impression. Women have no connection with a jamboree.
But you don't understand. I belong here. I'm substituting for Herbert. My Herbert, Herbert Baffin.
So that's the angle, eh? Well, lady, Herb Baffin may be your husband, but I want...
Herbert is my husband. We've been married for 15 years, and it's much too late to deny it now.
Let's get this thing straight. Did Herb send you here?
Why, of course not. He doesn't know a thing about it. Herbert never wants me to put my shoulder to the wheel. I brew so easily.
So it was your own idea. You thought it up all by yourself.
Yes. You know, I simply can't bear to be idle. Herbert doesn't know the real me. I have the spirit of a pioneer woman. One of those women who drove the Indians out of their covered wagons.
Nice of you to make the offer, Mrs. Baffin, but we can handle this job without your help.
Just what Herbert would have said. None of you men realize how utterly helpless you are without us. You need a mother to guide you. And it's a known fact that every woman is a potential mother.
Now, we appreciate your interest, Mrs. Baffin, but the jamboree is a man's affair. We feel that we're perfectly capable of arranging it ourselves.
But I don't. You men are all alike. Some of you have more hair than others, but that's a mere detail. Are you taking scalp treatment?
Certainly not.
They did wonders for Herbert. It may be fair to mention it, but he did have a little hair to start with.
That's a hot one. He's got you there, Baldy.
Yes, see? Well, we're becoming great friends already. And I'm sure we'll soon be working together like ants in a hive. Will you call the meeting to order, Mr. Baldy?
My name is not Baldy. My name is Basil Benenden Courtney.
Oh, I remember now, yes. Basil Benenden Courtney. Why, you must be Lily Courtney's husband, are you? We belong to the same garden club.
Yes, my wife's name is Lily.
Oh, poor Lily.
I assure you that my wife is in the best of health.
Oh, I didn't say a word about her health. I simply said, poor Lily. Are you a doctor or a lawyer, Mr. Courtney?
Neither. I am a certified public accountant.
Oh, I knew you must be something awfully clever. You know, women marry men either because they're handsome or because they're clever. what is this gentleman's name?
My name's Joe Gallagher. I'm a master plumber and I ain't good looking, but my wife married me anyhow. And her name's Kate.
Kate, now let me see. We had a laundress. Oh, no, of course, I heard you. It's going to be... Oh, wait. Is she Captain Gallagher?
I call her Kate.
We call her Catherine's Garden Club. Seems to bring out a personality. Oh, well, she won a blue ribbon for petunias last year.
Well, this is all very delightful, Mrs. Bevan, but we've got to get on to the arrangements for the jamboree.
Oh, yes, of course. Now, that's the first point I want to bring up. Jamboree is rather crude, don't you think? Salon is a beautiful word for a party. It was used in France by Louis XIV and Louis XV, and it was good enough for the XIV, and certainly if it was good enough for the XIV McCann family. Well, it certainly should be good enough for us.
Mrs. Baffin, you've got the wrong slant. This jamboree...
Salon, Miss Gallagher. We may just as well get used to calling it by its right name. Oh, shall I tell you what I've already done?
Hey, wait a minute. You ain't already got started.
Naturally. I never let the grass grow under my feet. Even if I am president of the garden club.
But at least you might have consulted us first, Mrs.
Well, there
Babbitt.
Was no need for that, Mr. Courtney. I depend entirely on my own intuition. This has never failed me.
What did your intuition tell you to do about the jamboree?
Salon, Miss Gallagher, with one O. Well, I have hired the Friends of Music String Quartet to play for us. They have such a lovely spirit. Why, they play the unfinished symphony so well that you'd never dream it wasn't all there.
Mrs. Baffin, we already got a band. You'll have to cancel the string quartet.
Quite impossible. I gave them a contract. If your band cares to, it can play in a corner of the second balcony where it won't disturb anyone.
Cibitarian Hall hasn't got a second balcony. It hasn't even got a first balcony.
You can't blame me for that, Mr. Gallagher. Blame the architect if you must. I am not interested in Cibitarian Hall.
But that's where we're holding the jamboree. Okay, have it your way. Saloon.
Ah, thank you. Now we're progressing splendidly. But you're wrong about where the salon is being held.
Indeed. Is this another of your little surprises, Mrs. Bevan?
Oh, how charming you put it, Mr. Courtney. But I'm not taking all the credit. You might have thought of it yourselves, if you thought of it.
Thought of what?
I have leased the opera house, including the ushers.
What? That dirty old dump? Why, it's ready to cave in.
It is a temple of the arts, Mr. Gallagher. Is nothing sacred to you?
It's full of rats and red plush. We don't want...
We already have it. I signed a contract.
Nice work. Why didn't you ask us about it first?
Well, how could I? I only met you a few minutes ago. Have you no sense of time, Mr. Gallagher?
You've signed two contracts smack over our heads. Two contracts. You sure fixed this up fine, Mrs. Baffin.
Oh, thank you. I knew you'd be grateful. You know, it makes me feel just like a little candle throwing out steam. Is $500 too much for the dancers?
Dancers? Say, what is this?
Not what you think, naughty man. All a dancing means to you, man, is a wayward female wearing a fan. Even my sweet Herbert came home from your last affair covered with feathers. So I have engaged the revolting ballet. Or is it the ballet of revolt? Well, anyhow, I have persuaded them to appear at our salon.
Ballet of revolt? What kind of a dance is that?
Oh, they're dreadfully modern, and all of them have suffered. They dance without shoes and without music. And next year, they may even dance without an audience. Isn't that radical?
Yes, so radical that they won't even be there.
Oh, yes, they will. They feel that they need contact with the masses. Oh, you really should see them, Mr. Courtney. They do a ballet called Eternal Peace. Simply heartbreaking. They just sit on the stage and stare at you for hours.
Mrs. Baffin, I'm going to tell you a few things. You've horned in and turned our jamboree into a pink tea. Opera house, screwy dancers, and a string quartet. Now, Herb Baffin is a nice guy, and I got nothing against him. But if I thought he put you up to this, I'd nail his hide to the wall.
Why, you can't be serious. Oh, Miss Courtney, would you open the window? I'm sure Mr. Gallagher has a touch of indigestion. He needs air.
There's nothing wrong with me.
Your stomach is battling with your soul, Mr. Gallagher. Indigestion affects Herbert just the same way.
Did you hear what she said, Baldy? Tell me I ain't losing my mind.
You're sane, Gallagher, and so am I. But we've reached a point where sanity is of no value.
Well, there's no justice, Baldy. We're a couple of ruined men.
Are you feeling better now, Mr. Gallagher?
I'm afraid I'll live.
Yes, so am I. I mean, of course you will, yes. Indigestion is almost never fatal. It simply comes and goes if you watch your starches.
Contracts all over the place. Why, the club will lose its shirt.
Oh, but that won't do at all. No, we must make money while we're lucky. lots of money. The Garden Club expects it.
In what way is the Garden Club concerned with this?
Oh, didn't I tell you, Miss Courtney? The Garden Club gets all of the profits from the salon this year.
By whose authority?
I promised the girls at our last meeting. Ours is a worthy cause. Do you realize that the training arbutus is dying out in this community? Do you realize that a worm with a funny name is threatening the safety of our ranunculus?
Mrs. Baffin, I have been patient, but this is the end.
Oh, now, Miss Scott, now you have indigestion. Why, it's definitely an epidemic.
I warn you, Mrs. Baffin, don't push me too far. I'm a peaceful man, but when I'm aroused...
Dear, oh, dear, if people would only learn to eat plenty of greens.
Take it easy, Baldy. We're licked. Let the Garden Club have the dough. Mrs. Baffin, from now on, the party is yours. Lock, stock, and barrel. Okay, Baldy?
Okay, Gallagher.
Oh, I'm proud of both of you. We have buried the pipes of peace. Man to man. We are comrades together marching us to war. And to prove it, you can both be in the tableau.
Tableau?
Yes. Oh, such a lovely tableau. I can't myself. It's all about America. The mind of America and the body of America in costume. Now you can be the mind of America, Miss Courtney.
Who, me?
Oh, yes, you'll be adequate if you wear your glasses. They make you look intelligent, and the audience will never know the difference. And you, Miss Gallagher, you can be the body of America in overalls, you know, with your muscles showing, just brute strength.
Oh.
And I will stand between you as the spirit of American organization that joins the mind and the body. The spirit of put and take. The spirit of pull and push together with no one doing more than his own honest share. The spirit of 1776 or was it 7?
WEAF, New York.
The Royal Gelatin Hour continues with Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, Marjorie Hillis, and the Hamilton College Choir. From the hilltop campus of Hamilton College at Clinton, New York, come our next guests of the evening. 60 of them. These young men make up that choir of that splendid college, renowned among other things for pressing a diploma into the feverish hand of one Alexander Wolcott. For 16 resonant years, the Hamilton Choir has been directed by the sensitive baton of Professor Paul Fancher. Their first selection this evening is a choral composition from Palestrina that is more than 400 years old. It is called Adoremus Te, and its strange harmonies come very close to modern music.
Oh.
Dream of Bygone Days, an unpublished Russian folk song full of the tragic undertones of the Russian steppes. Sings a rousing German drinking song, Das Lied von Rheinwein. Program we have not done in many years. To give you the details of this unusual and special event, here's Graham McNamee.
Sing from above, yours and mine forever. Our song, many will fashion it, so it tells of our passionate joy when love danced along and we.
In recent weeks, we have brought to our microphone a varied and, we think, an inspired collection of some of the more interesting people that inhabit this workaday world. We've had a bullfighter, a hero policeman, a football coach, a literary great in the person of Hilary Belloc, and tonight we add to this interesting retinue the name of Miss Marjorie Hillis. Miss Hillis, as you know, if you are up on your best sellers, is the author of Live Alone and Like It, that authoritative little tome for the ladies who are hot and fancy free. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Marjorie Hillis. Good evening, Miss Hillis. So you're the live aloner?
Yes, Mr. Valley, I guess I am. The extra woman in person.
Just what is an extra woman, anyway?
Oh, she's the current edition of the old maid, without the reticule or the complexes. She's the fifth at bridge or the 13th at a dinner party. But if she has any spunk, she overcomes these little handicaps. If she doesn't, she's liable to get the worst seat in the bus.
A sad state of affairs, I must say. Tell me, Miss Hillis, do you really live alone?
I certainly do, Mr. Valley, but I don't see why everyone should act as if I ought to.
I didn't quite get that one. Would you mind clarifying it a little?
Well, of course. I wrote a book called Live Alone and Like It, but why should that make me have to live alone? After all, if I wrote a murder story, people wouldn't expect me to commit murders, would they?
Well, frankly, I don't see why they should.
Now, take yourself, Mr. Valley.
Me?
Yes. Suppose you wrote 20 love stories and the public expected you to fall in love with 20 beautiful girls. How would you like that?
Very much indeed. I think you've got something there. But speaking of liking, do you like living alone?
Well, about 50% of the time I do, and about 50% of the time I don't. Isn't that a pretty good ratio when you live with somebody else?
Maybe it is, but there's one thing. I thought all women like someone to make a fuss over them.
Oh, we do. We adore it. But in looking round, I seem to have found it's the beaus who fuss over you, and the husbands fuss at you.
Do you think that many women agree with that theory?
I'm sure of it. From letters I've received from east and west and north and south.
You mean you're a best seller in the south, too?
Yes, but they sort of paired me off. Live alone and like it at the top of the list, and then right underneath, man, the unknown.
Miss Hillis, do you honestly think it's as much fun living alone as it is sharing your home with somebody else?
Well, frankly, I don't suppose it is as much fun, provided that everything's perfect. But as that happens so seldom, I think you might as well make the best of what you have got instead of getting into a dither about the things you lack, whether it's a husband or a yacht or a bank account or a face like Helen of Troy's.
But tell me, what is there to do about it?
Well, it's a good idea, once you've given up the manhunt, to get over the gloomy notion that your situation is worse than anybody else's. You know, this feeling has been experienced by practically everybody at one time or another, except those who'll experience it next year. You've got to be independent.
Well, what are some of the rules for being independent?
Well, one good one is never to let down just because you're alone. Anyway, that old-fashioned idea that a solitary female is a poor thing is as out of date as a dodo or a bustle.
Speaking of the bustle, do fashions enter into this business of living alone?
Well, not different fashions from what everybody else wears. After all, we don't have to be marked women or wear stripes like prisoners, you know. But when we're alone, we do have more chance to wear those elegant, seductive tea gowns that make you feel like a duchess.
I like them, too. When I see them, they make me feel like a Casanova. But I don't think it's fair to hide a seductive tea gown behind a solitary cream and sugar. And anyway, doesn't an audience heighten the effect of the fancy draperies?
Well, you see, one of the ways to live alone successfully is not to live alone too constantly. some friends whom you can see when you want to, and you'll often see when you don't want to, are pretty important. Every woman needs someone to whom she can show off her new hats and her old beaux, and especially her old beaux.
Now that raises an interesting point. What about men friends?
Well, what about them?
Well, granting that most of us are pretty dull fellows, doesn't there come a time when we may be classed as sort of necessary evils?
Oh, I'm not denying that it's nice to have a long list of presentable escorts to go out with.
Yes?
But you have to know your man. A lot of them seem to expect the girl to buy the dinners and theater tickets and pay for the taxi cab.
Oh, I see. It's the woman who pays and pays and pays.
Well, maybe we'd rather pay than stay at home. However, thank goodness there are still a few chivalrous gentlemen of the old school left who believe that man should be the provider.
Old school men for new school girls, is that it?
Exactly.
When a man calls on a girl who lives alone, how late should she let him stay?
The old etiquette books say he shouldn't call at all unless she has a chaperone. Maybe men used to be more dangerous characters. Anyway, now it seems all right for them to come to dinner and put in a long evening. Though, of course, it's high time for some men to go after the first highball.
Yes, I guess that you girls who live alone have to know your way around.
It's all a matter of technique. You can live alone just about any way you please. You can be the girl that nobody knows, or you can shine, even if you are an unclaimed jewel.
Well, you seem to have solved your problem all right, and I want to thank you for explaining it to us tonight. There's only one thing you've left out.
What's that?
What about the poor male who lives alone? What about him?
Oh, Mr. Valley, if he can't take care of himself, it's just too bad. I can't advise him, but I don't think you have to worry about that.
You never can tell, Mrs. Hillis. You never can tell. Again, reaching back into our song chest of yesterday, Mamie the Mermaid. The night I dreamed that I was down at the bottom of the sea. There is one thing about Edgar Bergen that sets him apart from other ventriloquists. Even if he were two people, he'd be a very funny couple. When Edgar and his dummy, Charlie McCarthy, made their debut in the air, we felt called upon to explain that both voices belong to one man. But that is no longer necessary, as you have decided that no matter how many voices Edgar has, he's still great. Enter now that inseparable duo, Edgar Bergen and his dummy, Charlie McCarthy.
My Charlie, you look studious with that book under your arm.
Yeah.
What is it?
It's my geography.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
You like it so well, you take it home with you.
Oh, no. It's because I don't like it. I have to take the darn thing home.
Oh, that? You have lots of reading to do?
Yes, indeed, yes.
You have lectures, too, I suppose?
Yes, I have three lectures a week.
Oh, I see.
Not counting the one I get from the principal.
Well, what is your trouble with geography?
Well, mostly showing up for class.
Oh, that's bad. That doesn't help your grades any.
I found that out.
Yeah.
I got zero yesterday on a test.
Zero?
Yeah, zero.
Well, that's nothing. What's nothing?
Zero.
Well, you'll soon be at the bottom of your class, young man.
I arrived there yesterday.
Well, you don't seem to be very ashamed about it.
Well, I don't care. They teach the same thing at both ends.
Yeah, right.
I don't care.
Then you like it back there.
Yes, I do. I like it.
Yes.
It's right near the radiator.
Yes.
It's nice and warm. I can sleep so nice.
All right. Young man, you should be thinking seriously of your future.
Yeah?
Yes. You know, you must plant rich seeds in your childhood to bear fruit when you're old.
You can't make a farmer out of me.
No. No, I'm trying to tell you that every day in school...
Yes.
...is like building a brick wall.
Uh-huh.
And every day is another brick in that wall.
Is that so?
Yes. It's a wall against poverty and ignorance.
How fascinating.
Yes. Now, if you skip school today, there's a brick missing, and you have a hole in the wall. Now, you don't want that, do you?
Well, you can use it for a window.
A window? With that attitude, you will have nothing but windows in your wall.
Well, you can use it for a greenhouse.
A greenhouse? Who's talking about a greenhouse?
I'm talking about a greenhouse.
All right. All right. You'll pay for your folly, young man. You'll pay.
All right, so I'll pay. I'll pay. All right, I'll pay.
Yes.
How about the guy in the restaurant yesterday? What about him? I go in for a bowl of soup, and I hang up my hat and coat, and there's a sign. It says, watch your hat and coat.
Yes. Well, that's for your protection.
Yeah, so I watch my hat and coat, and somebody steals my soup.
Yes.
What about that guy?
That has nothing to do with this.
No, no, that's all right. That's cute. That's all right.
Yes.
Oh, I died laughing.
Yes. I'm trying to tell you is that you must think of your future.
Yes.
And we're talking about geography now.
Yes.
How far have you gone in your geography book?
Well, I've gone to up to the clean pages. Up to the clean. I passed the raspberry jam spot yesterday. Skid over it.
Yeah, all right. What are you studying?
North America.
North America.
Yes.
And can you tell me where United States is?
Yeah, page 35.
35, yes. Now, isn't it true that when you look at the map, if you look to the left,
uh-huh,
or westward, you'll find the Rocky Mountains?
Yes.
And the Pacific Ocean?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, it's there. She's there.
Yes. Now, if you look to the east, you'll find
page 36.
Page 36.
That's the way it goes.
Yes. Now, tell me just exactly what troubles did you have in your examination? What questions did she ask you?
Well, she asked me, what was it? Oh, yes. Name the source of the Mississippi River.
Name the source of the Mississippi River.
Yes.
Yes. Well, that isn't difficult.
No, but I didn't know where it was, that's all.
Well, where is it?
I don't know. Where is it? I haven't been there.
No. The source of the Mississippi River.
Yeah. You tell me.
Well, the source, well, it must be, well, it's up, it's quite far up near...
Yes, it's near the source, yes.
Yes. Well, I can't think of it just at the moment, but of course that can be ascertained by consulting your geography.
Oh, sure, yeah. That's a fine answer, but it don't mean anything. No. That's how I got zero. I was ascertaining during the examination.
Oh.
You can't do that.
No. What was the other question?
Name the unusual points of interest in the West.
Unusual points of interest?
Yes.
Well, now, what is it that every tourist must see?
Sight?
Sight, yes, of course. Yes. But what one?
I don't know.
Well, Grand Canyon certainly is one.
Yes.
Yes.
I've seen pictures of that.
Yes. What do you think of it?
The Grand Canyon?
Yes.
Well, as a whole, it's terrific.
Yes.
It's the biggest washout I've ever seen.
Yes. How old do you think it is?
Well, I guess it runs, it must be 1,000 years.
Oh, it's more than that.
1,500?
More than that.
1,750. Now, you can take it or leave it. That's the best I can do. I ain't making a penny.
Oh. It runs from 10 to 20 million years.
My goodness. No wonder it looks worn out.
And now there's another point of interest, I think, and that is the desert in Death Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And if the tourist is lucky, he might see a mirage.
A mirage?
A mirage.
What's that?
A mirage?
Yeah.
Well, a mirage is very much like, it's something like a vision.
A vision?
Yes.
What's a vision?
A vision?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's like a mirage.
Yeah, well, that's where I came in.
When you see something that isn't there, we call that a mirage.
Oh, yes. Well, what do you call it if you don't see something that is there?
Well, I haven't time to explain that now. I'll go into that next week.
Well, that's as good an out as any.
tell our friend dear. But what will I tell my heart? It's easy to say to strangers that we played a game from the start. It's easy to lie to strangers, but what will I tell my heart? When I smile to hide all the tears inside, what an ache it will bring. Then I'll wander home to a telephone that forgot how to ring. I could say you'll soon be back, dear, to fool the whole town, maybe smart. I'll tell them you'll soon be back, dear, but what will I tell my heart?
It happened one night, Mr. Deeds goes to town, and now the good earth. The popularity of those pictures proves that people are quick to recognize something extra good. And here's still another example from Graham McNamee. Next week, another distinguished cast headed by Henry Fonda, one of the finest young actors in Hollywood. With Henry Fonda, we will have that daring young man on the flying trapeze, Walter O'Keefe. And, of course, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
This is the Rat Network.